Hi, friends. This is Angie Cooksey, Assistant Vice President for Enrollment Management at Bradley University. Welcome to the ALP.
Welcome to the ALP, the Admissions Leadership Podcast, a series of one-on-one conversations with people who have been climbing the leadership mountain in college admissions. Some are nearing the summit, some are already there. But how did they get there? And what can other climbers learn from their mindsets, habits, and experiences? I'm your host, Ken Anselman, VP for Enrollment Management at RHB. And with me today, as you heard, hello, Angie. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It is, it's fun to have you on the ALP, a fellow traveler in podcast land. Congratulations on launching Elevating Admission Voices earlier this year.
Thank you. It is fun to be on this side of the podcast microphone today.
We're only a minute or so into recording this, so we'll see if it's actually fun. I'm kidding. We'll try to make it light and lively. I've been listening to your podcast actually, and I the most recent one that you dropped, where you interviewed, I think, three folks who were on one side of the desk and have moved around to other roles on the desk. Kind of capturing the zeitgeist right now of transitions and whatnot, but it's really great to hear those stories. I think we're going to hear a lot more of those stories, but that's a long wind up, to what made you get into the podcasting business, on the higher ed side? What was the spark for you?
Well, I will be super transparent and say, so I get asked all the time, like, what's your favorite podcast, Angie? You must listen to so many podcasts. Because I travel, as all of us do, a good bit for this mm-hmm. work and this gig. Mm-hmm. And in full transparency, I am not really an active podcast listener, which probably, I know, I'm like probably the worst podcast host ever to admit it. But I tend to like zone out to, you know, some 90s country in the car and kind of that's usually my space. As people kept asking me, I sort of kept looking at the space and seeing who was out there. Hmm. And one of the things that happened for me is kind of a lot of things came together at the same time as they often do for people. And I was working on my dissertation and we were launching Elevate in Illinois, which is a space for women to have these conversations. Yeah. And doing some research for my dissertation, which ended up being a track of looking at the leadership pipeline and support and resources for women in enrollment management. And that was really kind of the starting and the launching point of the podcast, is because I kept asking questions of people and saying, you know, where are these stories? Or, you know, one of the biggest feedback I got from so many of the women that I was lucky enough to speak with in doing my research was, we just don't see ourselves out there. We don't know. We all feel like we're kind of navigating this blindly because we're not hearing it from other people. And not to say that it's not out there. It was just people didn't feel like they were finding it. And I just felt like I kept saying, like, somebody should do that. Somebody should do a podcast. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was my husband who was like, okay, if you keep saying that, like, maybe you should do it.
Yeah. Then he if quickly, not you, then who, right?
Right. And then he quickly regretted that because he, my husband does technical things in his career and does video and audio and things. Then he was like, wait, no, don't do it. Because then he knew he would have to edit it. So he's like, never mind. But then it was kind of in my brain, right? Like, well, shoot, maybe I could do this. Like, maybe there's a space for this. And I started to reach out to a couple people and test the waters and see if it was something people would be interested or something people would want to participate in. And it's just, I think that's one of the amazing things about our field is how willing people are to say yes and oh jump gosh. In with you. Yes. Even when you're like, I have no idea if this is going to work. And I have no idea if the space is too crowded, but would you be willing to try it? And so many people have been so gracious. And so that's really where Elevating Admission Voices came from. And this sense that our field of admissions is a lot bigger than we imagine it to be. And that, to me, we've often heard about, like, oh, you're on this side of the desk or you're on that side of the desk. And it gets a little combative sometimes. And I want Elevating Admission Voices to be a place where it's a table and there's space for everybody at the table and we just need to scoot our chairs over and let somebody else slide in. And so that's really where it started from.
Angie, I dig that. Good job with the metaphor.
I can't steal the table. I can't claim the table. That I heard that from somebody else, the idea that we're all at a round table, and I just have loved it so much. So I need to find the original source. So don't credit it to me, but I really like the visual of it.
I think you're building on it, though. The one that I first heard it from was Marie Bigham. Was saying we sit around a table, not on, you know, both sides of the desk or other side of the desk, but which makes room for independent counselors, or people like me who are higher ed adjacent now rather than inside the space, but that we all have different perspectives and values that we can bring to, you know, the core work, which is helping students find colleges that fit well with their talents and aspirations. Anyway, so congratulations too on having a built-in producer for your show. I'm going to have to
works out very well for me.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see if maybe Mrs. Gabby, what the if Mrs. Anselment, Mrs. Gabrielle Anselment, is interested in developing her production chops, so I can turn that over to her because it's a labor of love, Angie.
It is.
It'd be nice to have in-house talent to help out with that. I'd like to hear a little bit more, especially hearing you talk about the podcast, and really it came out of Elevate, and which was informed by your dissertation. Like, you've built this ecosystem, it seems to me. Can you talk a little bit more about the Elevate program? And I want to make sure I've got it right. Is it called Elevate in Illinois?
It is called Elevate, yep.
Yeah. Just for folks that may be unfamiliar with it, what's the mission of this particular organization?
Sure. So we are a organization or an event within the Illinois ACAC ecosystem. And Illinois has really done such a remarkable job. And that's where my home base is. So not to say other places aren't doing also remarkable jobs, but that's where I've grown up in this profession is in Illinois. And really they've created a culture in Illinois of saying, if something's missing or we need to do something else, bring it to the table and let's do it. And so I, you know, grew up going to Summer Institute and then had the privilege of being in the first class at Middle Management Institute and getting to really learn about our field in this really dynamic way that Illinois has created for professionals. And again, as things kind of started to collide and my role started to change and I was shifting, you know, we talk a lot about new professionals in our field and what we can do to try to keep these professionals so it's not always like in for three or in for life, that we, you know, really start to cultivate. And I sort of started to looking around maybe year 10, 11, 12. And I was like, well, now what is there for me in a very selfish way, right? Like what do I do now?
Hold on. What's selfish about that?
Well, no, not in a bad, like, I'm not using selfish as a bad thing. No, I think it's okay to be selfish sometimes. I think it's okay to say, hey, I have questions that aren't getting answered. So where are we going to find places to get those answered? And we know, especially right now, we have so many more of our senior leadership type people leaving the field. And I think that was where it really was like, hey, we need to look at some of this and make sure we're addressing these people who've committed to our industry and committed to our field. And so again, I sort of started asking questions. That's what I do. And I reached out to a few people and I reached out to Courtney Wallace, who is at Augustana and just truly a remarkable professional as well. And I said, hey, I have some of these kinds of questions. You've been in this field and doing this role for about the same amount of time. Are you feeling any of these things? And she was like, 100%. So in the way that all great things come to be, we sat down after a panel discussion at a high school in a local watering hole establishment and literally on a notebook piece of paper said, here are the people I would want to hear from. Here are the questions that I have. How do you even work with vendors? When you're the person that has to start to sign contracts, how do you know that a vendor is a good person or like a good vendor to use and are going to meet the needs of your organization? How do you develop professionals coming up after you? How do you ask for things in the role that you're in now to help you continue to grow? How do you negotiate? Like all of these things that in some capacities feel very obvious, but on the same side of that coin, nobody really necessarily teaches you. You kind of have to figure it out. And that's where Elevate started. And so we dreamed it up and we brought it to Illinois ACAC and they unanimously said, absolutely, smart. Yes, yeah. This is awesome. And that was in January of 2020. Then we all know what happens.
Yeah. All the best things happened, you know, at the beginning of that year.
Yeah. And so we put it on pause and we said, you know what, yeah. We really believe that this is a program that's going to be best served to build those relationships collaboratively in person. And so then we waited to launch in 2021 so that we could do more things in person. We did have some hybrid element to it just because we are all still really actively navigating what that looked like to be in spaces in person. And we had about 24 really awesome professionals from all levels of our professional scope. And so we had attendees from the community college side. We have had attendees that are in more advanced roles, new director professionals. Really, the only kind of caveat was we asked that you had at least 8 years of experience in our field. And even that, we had people reach out and they're like, I have 7 years, but I just got promoted to a director and this would be really helpful. Yeah, come join us, have part of these conversations. Yeah. And so that's where it started. And we're in our second year right now. We were very blessed to receive kind of the NACAC seal of approval last year as a Rising Star Award recipient at last year's NACAC on the West Coast. And it's just been so fun to hear from awesome people across the country, being able to bring professionals in, and then really just have those conversations in person. And one of the things we asked in our first meeting for the second cohort was, what are you exceptional at? Unapologetically exceptional at? And you could have heard a pin drop, because that's just not something we challenge ourselves to lean into sometimes, right? We say, oh, but I'm good at that, but here's all the ways I'm not good at that. And we really challenged the group to say, like, no buts. Like, what are you exceptional at? And it's those ideas that I get really excited about. You shouldn't have asked me, because I could just go on for this whole podcast about this.
Well, that's why we do this, Angie. When are we going to be able to read the book that you're going to write about all of this?
I just finished my dissertation, so I plan to not write anything.
You've got plenty of time now. I mean, what are you going to do with all that free time? I'm half joking, but also serious, going back to something you said, which is, you know, creating that resource for people. You know, sometimes it's getting down and just having the conversation with folks. Yeah. But what about those folks that don't have the ability to connect? I'm not saying this is on you, Angie, figure it out. But, you know, there are so many folks that maybe aren't able to be reached by certainly a powerhouse like Illinois ACAC, but other ACACs or other groups. But I would sign up for that book, for starters, because that litany of questions that you went through all make so much sense. And those are the things that so many people, especially when they're transitioning into a leadership role or getting ready for it, need to know how to get the answers to. Because as you know, I'm sure, once you get appointed to that leadership role, you are ontologically changed and you automatically get all of the knowledge you need to be successful, right?
Oh yeah. It just, you're just tapped with it. It just comes in.
Yeah, no, that's the, you know, as for so many folks, yourself included, you're really good at what you do. You move up to the next level and you get farther away from the things that you were really good at doing. Yes. And move into a whole new space. And there's not always the resource available, certainly not at our own institutions. I shouldn't say certainly, not often at our own institutions.
100%.
But relying on people like you and others to sort of help build and extend that knowledge base for folks.
It's kind of funny. I have two kids and I feel like I often look around and I'm like, where is the grown up? In that, like, who, you know, nobody teaches you how to be a parent. Right. Like, it's the same thing though, right? In these roles, as we grow and we transition professionally, you know, you don't realize how much you rely necessarily on that community or on that person ahead of you, sort of in that pipeline, till suddenly you're like, oh boy.
You're that person.
I'm that person. Like, people think that I know how to sew on a button, but like, nobody taught me to sew on a button. So like, how am I supposed to teach other people? And so I think for me, that's where a lot of those questions have come from. And again, in that really okay, selfish way to say, hey, I bet if I have questions, other people do too. So I'm going to ask them. And I just made myself a podcast so that I could.
Boom. We need to come up with a word. Maybe there already is a word, but it's escaping me right now because I haven't yet had enough coffee. I heard you say, okay, selfish. Like, what's the, you know, when you said selfish before, I stopped you, I interrupted, sorry. Yeah. But to that idea of, you know, looking out for ourselves is a bad thing. Right. Yeah, I think we got to come up with a better term for that. Self-interested, self-advocacy. I don't know.
I like that. Yeah.
I note that we're seeing a lot more of it.
I agree.
You had mentioned earlier, you know, we're seeing people who are in those leadership roles, people with a lot of experience at an institution or even just in the profession, who are saying, nah, I'm done, or I need to do a different side of the table, or. I think more people are asking questions about the work that they're doing and whether they want to keep doing it that way. To go back to your most recent podcast, the three folks you featured there all had to go through that discernment process themselves.
Yeah.
Work-life balance was a common theme there. Entrepreneurial spirit, wanted to give it a go. I mean, there are so many different motivators, but it seems that people are answering that bell more than before.
Yeah. And I've said this a couple times to a couple different people, and I feel like maybe I'm going to become the person in higher ed that people don't let talk. But I think in a lot of sense, higher ed is in for a bit of a reckoning of saying, you know, we've sat on this idea for a long time of, yes, your compensation maybe isn't there, but you're doing good work and you're that should be enough because you're changing lives. And yeah. That is all true and all well and good, but it also comes at an emotional cost for a lot of our professionals. It comes at a mental cost. It comes at a time that they're spending with their families. And I think it's exciting in a lot of ways that professionals are standing up and saying, yeah, the work I do is really important, but I also deserve to be compensated appropriately for that time and energy and effort that I'm putting in as the front door to this access of higher education in a lot of capacities. And I'll be interested to see how that plays out, because I think we're seeing it start where, like you said, a lot of professionals are kind of raising their hand and saying, I don't want all of that on my plate anymore. I'm going to go do something else and take my skills and talents. Cause that's, again, the thing that I think is so remarkable about our work in enrollment management. We build remarkable professionals. We teach people how to speak in public. We teach people how to make phone calls in a way that's really meaningful and moves the conversation along. We teach people how to go out and have conversations with strangers that they've never met before. Right. I mean, those aren't things or skills that are unique to our field. We're building professionals that have this massive toolbox that can then take it and do other things and be compensated in a way that aligns with the work that they're doing. And so, like I said, I'm probably not making a lot of friends at the highest levels of leadership in higher ed as I have that conversation or share that. But I will say,
only because you're speaking the truth.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I will say, if you are in those positions, in those highest levels, and you don't think that your staff is having these conversations, I promise you are wrong, and that they are, and that people on your team are asking if the work that they're doing is worth it. And that's a scary thing for our field.
Yeah, I agree. Is there, so compensation is one thing, right? But there is also at what point, I'm not asking you to solve the math on this because I don't know if anybody has, there's also just the borders are gone, or at least they are a lot lower between work and life. And, you know, at some point the compensation may catch up to that, but then there's another reckoning, which is, okay, so the compensation's there, but I'm still not seeing more of the time that I need. And I wonder if that's, you know, people at different stages in their careers will be making different decisions about those things.
Yeah.
But I'm also curious, and again, I don't expect you to have the answer, but if you do, share it with the world. Why now? What is changing now? It seems to be happening we're certainly talking about it in this profession a lot more than we were.
Yeah.
But these issues have been there for a long time. I know a lot of folks say it's the pandemic, but I'm not sure if that's entirely it. Do you have any ideas, no, Angie?
I mean, I think I agree with you. I think that that's definitely, in a lot of ways, the impetus for it. I think a lot of people learned we could do this work in a different kind of way. Mm-hmm. And then, right, a switch flipped, and it was like, but now we're going to go back to doing it the way we've always done it. And I think There were just a lot of people who were like, wait, I did this a different way and found a different level of flexibility or found a different level of flow in my life. And Sure, I'm happy to come back to the office, but I still need you to recognize that, hey, I want to leave at 4:15 every day because my kid has soccer at 5 and I want to be the kid, the person and the parent or the grown up responsible to take my kid to soccer. And I don't know that every office, as they transitioned back, brought that level of flexibility with them. And I think there's a lot of professionals out there. And I certainly don't think that our field is unique to this. I think we just are seeing it more, again, because you said the conversations are a little bit louder than they've been maybe in previous years. But I think people realized in maybe a bolder way what they wanted their priorities in their life to be and are willing to say, I think I can find this in a different way if you're not willing to help me get there. And so I don't know. Yeah. Like you said, I don't know that we can blame it all on the pandemic, but I think it certainly allowed people to kind of reevaluate what that looks like and where their priorities were. You know, I have certainly lots of friends, as we all do, who work in the for-profit sector and in other corporate companies. And so many of them had shared, they had hired during the pandemic and you couldn't really move and you couldn't really do that. And so people got hired fully remotely for a job in Chicago, but they lived in Alabama or they lived in New York. And all of a sudden their work is back in person and they're like, I don't think I'm going to move. And companies have had to look at, what does that look like? We hired you remote. You've been doing this job remotely. Do we really need you to move to Chicago or to New York or to, wherever? Mm-hmm. And I think higher ed hasn't necessarily been as flexible to some of that. And certainly I don't want to say, 100% across the board, there's certainly really great opportunities in places. And I've been the recipient of that. I've been remote my entire career.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about that. Which is interesting. I realize, as saying that,
I'm also the person that gets to uniquely take advantage of it, but I don't think as a field, we've done a great job of it.
No. And you introduced yourself with your role, very senior leader at Bradley, but you can tell your own story. Where do you actually live? Not in Peoria.
So Bradley University is located in Peoria, Illinois, which for those who are not familiar with the geographic landscape of Illinois is in the upper part of central Illinois. It's not necessarily geographically the center of the state, but it's pretty dang close. I live in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is about 3 hours and 10 minutes door to door.
Let's hear it for Wisconsin.
It is just right over the border of Illinois and Wisconsin. Yeah. Again, geographic landmarks. If you're familiar with Great America in Illinois, I live about 10 minutes from Great America.
I don't live that far from Mars Cheese Castle then, I'm guessing.
I do not. Right. I am one exit from Mars Cheese Castle. I actually grew up in the Chicago suburbs. And funny story, Ken, I had never been to Wisconsin before I moved here. I anecdotally feel that if you grow up in the Chicago suburbs, you tend to be a person who vacations either to Wisconsin or to Michigan, or you were the family that I was always jealous of growing up who like got to go to Florida. My family had family in Michigan, and so we always went to visit in Michigan, and I had never been to Wisconsin before I moved here, and now I live here. So it's an interesting fact.
It's nice having you on this side of the cheese curtain. So welcome. I know you've been here a while.
The cheese is keeping me here. I'm not going to lie. You guys, our grocery store has 3 aisles of cheese, and that is not an exaggeration.
Mm-hmm. That's why we're such a healthy people here. Yeah. Just like the French, right? That's the Wisconsin paradox.
Right.
It's the beer, though. I think that undercuts
the beer is really the downfall, I think.
Yeah. If we had just done the red wine with the cheese, we'd probably be, this would be just like France, I suspect.
I expect you're right.
Yeah, in no way whatsoever. anyway, sorry. Sorry, dear listener, for all the whiskey. Although if you're from Wisconsin, you know what we're talking about. So I'm interested in hearing more about your being a remote person who gets to have a big fancy title and giant responsibilities, and yet somehow you manage to pull it off remotely. I'm saying that with a bit of irony in my tone.
No, but totally. First of all, one of the things that's funny about my work being remote is the number of people at Bradley who think I work on campus, because I am there pretty frequently. And so people all of the time are like, wait, what? Where do you live? So I typically am on campus over the course of a year, about twice a month. And we all know that this is a field where sometimes there are a lot of things happening and sometimes there are not a lot of things happening. And so some months, like in June this year, I was on campus every single week. But then I was on campus once in July, I was on campus once in August, and I'll be on campus once in September. So it does kind of average out to about two times a month. I will say the move of everybody into a more virtual space has done wonders for my life, just because people are much more used to doing that. And I think a lot of us have seen, even on campus, that people would just rather have a meeting remote so they don't have to leave their office and walk to another building. And so, you know, they're having remote meetings anyway. I started on campus my first year in 2007. I worked 1 year on campus. And then my husband, who worked in TV at the time, in my first business trip for Bradley, I was recruiting in Ohio. He went and interviewed for some positions at local or at television stations, and called me while I was in Ohio. And he said, I got a job offer at the Fox station in Milwaukee and I'm going to accept it. And I was like, okay, but like, I work and live in Peoria. So that seems like it's going to be a challenge. And so I,
surprise.
Very, very naively, and I think about this young woman often, is I went into my boss I started in July. In October, the end of October, the beginning of November, I went into my boss and I said, I am going to resign. But I had signed a contract, because at that time Bradley had year-long employment contracts. And I didn't know that I could have just said, I'm leaving now. So I was like, I'm going to resign, but I'm going to stay till the end of my contract in May. And my boss, either because he was like, well, she doesn't know any better, so I'm not going to tell her, or didn't think about it, was like, okay. So I stayed at Bradley till May. My husband, or my fiance at the time, my husband now, he moved to Milwaukee and got started working at the Fox affiliate. And then in May, I packed up our little one-bedroom apartment and I moved up here, and had resigned my position and moved up here and tried to figure out something else while we kind of established our life. And then in February, so about 8 months later, I got a call from Bradley that said, hey, one of our regionals is leaving. Would you fill the remainder of her contract, because it's financial aid season? Again, this is before the financial aid stuff had changed. This is when we used to file FAFSAs in January. So February was such a huge time for us. And I wasn't really doing anything that was moving my life along. And I was like, yeah, I'll take anything. So I went back to Bradley as a regional in February of 2009 and have been remote and regional ever since then. And then my role has just changed as I have taken on different responsibilities. Yeah. And I also appreciate the flexibility and really the advanced thinking that Bradley has provided for that, because there's a lot of places, and I've talked to a lot of professionals that are like, well, I've done all this stuff, but there's nowhere to go. And they're not creative to think about opportunities. And Bradley has been really supportive of saying, you're doing the work at an assistant director level, or you're doing the work at an associate director level, or we think you should be the director of Chicagoland recruitment. And that's how my career has moved from being an admission counselor to where I sit now as an assistant vice president.
Wow. as you were describing that, how the roles shifted and the responsibilities shifted, was that Bradley saying, okay, you're ready for this, and now you're ready for this? Was it you saying, I'm ready for this, can I have this? Because, I mean, sometimes we're in those spaces where, you know, folks are waiting for things, other folks, you know, just get up and ask for it. What was it? How did that evolve for you?
Yes, both and.
I got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there were certainly times in my career where I was like, I am frustrated. I need to do more, or I think I'm doing this and people are coming to me. And so I'm pseudo having people report to me. And so there needs to be some level that, or some acknowledgement of that. And then there's certainly been times where I have been called into the office and said, the work you're doing is at this level and we would like to offer you this position or this title. And then there's oftentimes, as I think a lot of us have run into in higher ed, where, you know, you kind of look around your office and you're like, you are now the most next senior person working here. So we're going to give you a title because everyone else has been hired, you know, in the last 8 months. And so that was certainly true of the beginning of my career a little bit was, you know, oh my gosh, you've been here now, you know, the third longest or the fourth longest or whatever. But then in this transition to assistant vice president, that was not something that I was expecting. That was certainly never something that was even on my like vision board of possibility, because who has done that? And not to say that no one's done it, but nobody I knew in my circle was at that senior level fully remote. And when my boss, Dr. Justin Ball, who, if you don't know him, he is truly a remarkable professional, called me into his office on a morning in mid-May, early May. And he was like, you know, we've had some transition, as a lot of places have. There's a lot going on. I would really like it if you would be my effective number two, and I'd like to offer you the role of assistant vice president. And I was shocked and silent. If you know me, that doesn't happen because it just didn't ever even cross my mind that it could be possible. And I think for me, that's, again, something that's great about this profession is there are possibilities. And so if you're not seeing them in the place that you are, look around. And not everybody's super mobile, and I appreciate that, but see if there's places you would want to work that have remote opportunities, or see if there's ways you can talk in your office about how you can find those things and how you can put those things under your umbrella of responsibility. Because one of the things I think is pretty great is the possibility in our field. And you're right, sometimes we have to ask for it. And sometimes we get told no. And I've certainly been told no a lot of times in my career.
But
if you never ask, then there's never even an opportunity for somebody to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes folks are afraid to step up and ask because it's a risk, right?
Totally.
And some offices may not be as open to that ask, or, you know, or maybe a less secure leader might see that as a threat or a problem. You know, I was talking with Tony Sarda,
who's
been on the, you know, Tony. Yeah.
Yes.
He was talking about this vision, sort of like an Avengers Assemble, where, you know, there might be a time, or whether there will be a time, where admission offices think differently about how they staff their teams to begin with. Now that you've got this, we've been shown that remote work can work, especially in a profession where, you know, depending on where you work, quite often you have to go to the places where students are to see them anyway, if you're seeing them at all. So there's travel involved. There's a lot of work off campus. And so what's to prevent an admission office from saying, we're going to build a super team and we're just going to go and get the best talent available. Doesn't matter where they are, as long as they're close to an airport, or a train, or a, you know, car rental place, and staff that way. What do you think about that?
I think it's an interesting concept and an idea. I do think there's always going to be a role for people to be in a traditional on-campus experience, right?
Of course.
We want people to. So I just don't want anybody to hear me and be like, Angie thinks everybody should be remote.
Nope,
I don't.
And I'm not hearing that from you. I'm just playing out a thought experiment.
Yeah. And I think we're actually seeing that. There's definitely some schools who have created very extensive and very expansive regional networks. And they, you know, I think 10, 15 years ago, if a school had, what, three regionals, we were like, whoa,
they have
three people. now you have places like, in Oklahoma or in Alabama where they've got, Hawaii, Pacific. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were doing it probably first in a lot of capacities, but they did. They said, we know we don't need everybody to be on campus. It's more cost effective. It is a better life flow balance for people to be in the places where we're recruiting the students. And so I do wonder if we'll start to see more of that and that expansion of the regional model grow. I think people have to have really thoughtful conversations and intentional conversations when they grow a regional model, because it takes time to build a territory. And so if you're just going to plop somebody in Nebraska with no support and no anything, then when you're surprised it fails, you kind of set yourself up for that. And so that would be my mindful challenge to people is, yes, let's think bigger. Let's create those teams and find those people. But then you also have to follow up with the support to give them the resources to do their job. Yeah. I know when we were remote at Bradley early on, we have always had access to remote access into our staff meetings. And I remember having conversations with other regionals and they were like, what do you mean you're in your staff meetings? And we were putting together technology that didn't even really exist to be able to make sure that our regional team was in our staff meetings and part of that team culture. And obviously technology makes it a lot easier to do that these days, but you have to think about that stuff. How is that employee who's not on your campus having a similarly dynamic experience with your team? And what do you need to do to make that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. Kudos to Bradley for being, sounds like, forward thinking on a whole bunch of things. Ahead of the curve. Well done. This has been super thought-provoking, hearing about the podcast, the things you're talking about there, about Elevate, how you've managed to do your work and climb in the profession while being in a remote location. I think that's an interesting model that I hope people pay very close attention to when they listen to this show, because it can be done. Are there things, although I should probably ask, are there things that you miss from that at all? Because I think sometimes that goes through people's mind about not being on campus.
Oh, sure. That's a really good question. Yes. In the hallway, the hallway conversations can really be magical. Yeah. I don't think people give enough credit sometimes to the ideas that get generated just from passing somebody by and saying like, hey, I was just working on this. And then it becomes this kind of bubble of something, and then it becomes something bigger. I miss that because I'm not there often enough to be involved in some of that. And then when I am there, my calendar's typically pretty booked because I want to maximize the time that I'm on campus and in person. So that would have to be the biggest thing off the top of my head that I miss. And I get some of that because you have GChat and, you get some of it, but that kind of organic magic, it's hard to recreate.
Yeah. I'm in a fully remote role myself now, and that's one of the things I really miss most is the, just what you described. And also, it's appointment-based casual now. Like if you want to have those casual conversations, although, it's easy enough in Slack just to say, hey, do you have a minute? And you just, pop up in a Zoom really quickly, but it's still, there's a tiniest bit of friction makes it a little harder to get to that spot. So once somebody figures out, some sort of technology, this would be really creepy. It's, the panopticon or whatever, but some sort of technology where you can always hang around in an office, like replicate the live.
Wasn't there like a robot in like the Jetsons that was on wheels? Like her little face was a computer screen?
Maybe. You're trying to see if I'm old enough to have watched that in its original run. I appreciate that.
I feel like maybe there was something like that. But yeah, I agree. It's until we can be everywhere, we have to be mindful of where we are and how we can use that space.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just set up monitors all over my office right now that peer in on all of my colleagues so I can just look over to them and talk. Now this is getting into weird speculation.
That seems weird. I feel like...
Yeah. I'm, recreating video cubicles or something like that. Somebody's listening to this right now like, wow, that idea is so crazy. It just might work. And then, multi-billion dollar business that we missed out on. But anyway, all right, Angie, this seems like a really good time to transition to the rapid descent.
Okay.
You ready? Eight questions, so. Although I might pass on one of them given what you said earlier about podcasts. But we'll start with the first one, and I'm wondering if it's going to be 90s country, given what you said earlier. What is your walkout song?
But mine is actually Girl on Fire by Alicia Keys.
Okay. Okay. What is the best thing you've read lately?
Open Book by Jessica Simpson. I picked it up thinking that it was going to be a fun, light read. And I think in like page 10, I was crying. It was great.
What's on your list that you want to read next?
The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. It's been on my to-do. It's actually sitting on my desk. I just haven't read it yet.
What are the five languages? Or do you have
I don't know. I'll tell you once I read the book. I'll let you know.
It's a mystery. I ask, what's a podcast you particularly enjoy? We can say yours if you want.
I love recording my podcast. It is truly, and I'm sure you maybe feel this way too, Ken, like the energy you get out of hearing other people's stories. Everybody's like, isn't it hard to record? And I'm like, no, I feel like I just get to provide this platform to hear the amazing things that people in our field are doing. So I love the recording process of it. I don't love hearing my own voice in the post-production process of it. So I loved recording it. I don't particularly myself love to listen to it, but I have been so blessed to get feedback from people who have listened to it and just said kind of what you were saying about the podcast that you listened to. Wow, I hadn't thought about that. Or it was so nice to hear somebody who's doing what I want to do or interested in. And so that it's been so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a favorite thing to make in the kitchen?
If anyone follows any of my social media, I really like to make charcuterie boards. That is like my stress relief. And so it's like such a fun creative outlet, and it requires very little to no cooking. But they're fun to do. And I do full big tables and little tiny boards. If you invite me to something and you ask me to bring something, I likely will bring a charcuterie board. Yeah.
if you've got to put one together for a small board rather than an entire table, what's your base? What are you building around?
So I have some wood, like butcher block style cutting boards. And so I often use those. We went out with some friends the other day, and she had a kind of a potluck thing. And she's like, Angie, can you bring brownies? So I signed up to bring brownies. And then I brought like a whole dessert thing, and I sent her a picture, and I said, I'm sorry, I have a problem. And she's like, you have a problem, but everyone's not going to be sad about it. And it's totally okay.
So what are your go-to starters on a charcuterie board?
I typically do some kind of goat cheese. I love like goat cheese drizzled with honey. I usually have some kind of a spicy cheese because my husband likes some spicier cheese options. And then usually I just play with it and have fun. So again, I live right next to a Woodman's where there are, I'm not lying, three aisles of cheese. And so sometimes I just buy cheeses because they have a fun name or because they look cool. And then sometimes they're a winner. And sometimes we're like, we will never buy that again. Typically there's a couple kind of staples, and then I usually fill in with whatever I find.
Okay. And for folks that don't know, Woodman's, another fine Wisconsin institution, a massive, massive grocery store.
You really can't even describe it. Like, you have to just go into it.
I would say it's like a Walmart for food, but that I don't think that works. Because I don't know. There are surprises you find in
there are surprises. I don't know if your Woodman's is like this. My Woodman's has wood paneling to just give you a sense of the vibe.
Yeah. It's got a real 70s feel to it.
It's a whole experience.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, long aisles, but like with surprisingly diverse food options in it.
Yes.
Especially on the international front.
Any sort of food sensitivities, food allergies, food particularities, or you're just curious what a full aisle of like 98 different kinds of jelly looks like, Woodman's is kind of the place for you.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Woodman's. Better prices because we're employee owned or something.
Oh, you are a Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Three more questions, Angie. What do you use to take and keep your notes?
Yeah. So during my dissertation, I bought a Remarkable, which is an electronic notebook.
Oh, seriously? Is that the one that just, it replicates writing on paper, but it's digital?
Yeah. Yes.
Tell me more.
It's very cool. It also, you can send it to yourself. And then, you know, all those things that you get via email where they're like, we need you to sign this. And you're like, I don't want to print it out and then fax it back. And you can just download it and sign it on your Remarkable. And it makes your life so much easier. But yeah, so I take a lot of notes on that. And you can like make folders and keep places. So if you're somebody that likes to have all of your this meeting in one place or that meeting in one place. And if I don't have that or I forget to charge it, because that is the downside of technology, I tend to be just a regular kind of notebook person with a Sharpie S gel pen and just go with that, kind of old school. So I either have really new technology or a pen and paper.
does the Remarkable, though, is it as I imagine, like the surface is supposed to replicate? Like when you're writing on it, it feels more like paper than like if you're using the Apple Pencil on an iPad?
Yeah, it does. I wouldn't say it's 100%, but it's probably a solid like mid-90s%.
Seriously?
Yeah, I really like it. When I see you next, I will have it and you can test it out. Because I was the same way. I kind of didn't buy into it. And then I was somewhere where somebody had it and they let me try it. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And that was the impetus for me to get one and use it.
I will have to, I'll have to book my travel to Itasca. I'm assuming, is Illinois going, is IACAC back in
Itasca? No, we're in Springfield this year.
I'm sorry, Illinois ACAC people, please forgive me for not keeping the schedule in my head of where it is. But
it's a big state, so they're trying to move it around.
Perfect. That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. What's a memorable bit of advice you've received?
Yeah. You don't have to do everything all at once.
Amen.
I'm not particularly good at listening to it, but it is a good piece of advice.
Yeah, sometimes the best advice is that which you pass along to other people. And then last question, presuming you have a bucket list, and if you don't, imagine that you do, name an item on the list you haven't yet checked off.
Yeah, so the biggest one on my list is to visit Japan. I was actually born in Japan. And so I would like to be able to go to the place and see where I was born.
Where were you born in Japan?
I was born in Okinawa, Japan. Both my parents were Marines. So I was born on the Marine Corps base in Okinawa, Japan.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. That is on my list, too. I would love to get to Japan. That sounds wonderful. Thanks for all the advice. I should also say this episode has been brought to you by Remarkable and Woodman's and by the letter B. I don't know. I just felt like a Sesame reference in there. Angie, thanks for joining me on the Alp today. And I tip my cap to you, fellow podcaster. You're doing great work out there.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been, it is still fun. I know we started at the beginning. Like I was excited for it to be, and you were like, we'll see if it's still fun. It was still fun.
Good.
So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. In the show notes, I'll provide all the relevant links to your rapid descent answers, including to Alicia Keys. In the meantime, Angie, may all your big dreams come true, at least the good ones. And to you, dear listener, thanks for listening. Be well and do well.